James.
Jacob.
Guess what?
What?
We are live on Facebook.
That is absolutely true.
But the people listening to this after the fact will not have seen it. So if you're not following on Facebook, go follow on Facebook. See it by then.
That's a good idea. Welcome to the Steelers Battle League Podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host Cody. Cody, how are you this fine Monday evening?
It's not a victory Monday.
Nope.
But it's not a losing Monday either.
No, it's just
I mean, the Ravens lost, so that's big.
It's a bye week Monday.
Yeah. Bye, bye. But like NSYNC.
Bye, bye to the Ravens.
Bye, heck yeah. Bye, bye to the Ravens. No, I'm doing great. I'm doing fantastic. Life is keeping me on my toes right now. Insanely busy with work and obviously stuff with the podcast. We just got business cards.
Yeah.
I was hyped about that. They turned out really good.
They turned out great.
If you want one of those, hit us up. We'll I don't care. I'll mail you a business card if you want a business card. We'll figure out a way.
Send you a few of them. Give them to your friends.
Heck yeah. But I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic, man.
Fantastic, he says.
Kick the week off with a nice 11-hour day. It's going to be a good pay day this week.
I got a 10-hour in. If you got 11, I had to have gotten 10 because you started literally an hour before me.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Yep.
James started at 4:30 this morning. I started... No, 4:40.
4:40.
I was at 5:40. I had a little bit less of a travel day.
Yeah.
A little bit. You were in Cleveland, right?
Yeah, I was in Cleveland.
Nasty place. As a Steelers fan.
So, first stop, dude, I'm talking to one of the people there and tell him that I'm from Erie, and he's like, that's in Pennsylvania. What are they sending you all the way there from? I said, you got to remember, used to be competing companies and whatever. He's like, oh boy, I just got to keep them Steeler fans out of here. I just kind of laughed at him. I was like, you have no idea.
Yep, we're sneaking our way in.
And then we talked AFC North football a little bit, and he felt that the Bengals are the real deal.
Yeah.
And he also thought that the Browns might be the worst team in the division.
Smart Browns fan. one of very little number of them. No,
come
just kidding.
Those once in a while.
A little bit.
So let's get into the news, man.
Yeah,
there
we
is
got
news to talk about.
Steelers news specifically.
Much appreciated. Much we thought it was going to happen, right?
Yeah.
After last game, T.J. Watt named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week.
Much recognition.
Yes.
Finally.
Yeah.
Not that I don't think he hasn't.
Much deserved.
Yeah. Not that I don't think he hasn't been recognized, but it's a matter of.
Yeah, everybody's always
the
like,
accolades
but.
Of recognition.
He's good, but.
Yeah. He's good, but Tre'Davious
he
White.
Never
he's
gets
good,
triple
but Aaron
teamed.
Donald. Oh, that's where I was going with
he
that.
He never
yep.
gets triple teamed.
I'm pretty
he
sure
beat
he
a
got...
quadruple team to win the game and sack the quarterback and force the fumble. So, yeah, poo-poo on your he doesn't get triple teamed nonsense.
So, yes, again, T.J. Watt, after last week's game, obviously not this week, was named AFC Defensive Player of the Week. With that being said, keeping it on the outside linebacker position, Steelers actually attempted to sign outside linebacker Whitney Mercilus.
Yeah.
Which would have been insane.
Yeah, that'd be a heck of a number four outside linebacker.
I would never be uncomfortable with a rotation.
No, no. Well, you wonder if they would have played him on special teams at all. I kind of doubt it. I bet it would have been all middle linebackers and tight ends and safeties. But you know what? I would have been totally cool with it.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I don't think he even signed for that much money. Wherever he signed was a pretty minimal deal. On the topic of outside linebackers, we got a question here from Josh Perry on our Facebook Live. Josh asked, do you think T.J. Watt should be fined for punching the ball? I saw the news today, he said. If you're not familiar with this, T.J. Watt was fined $10,000.
A little over.
Yeah, hair
it was
over.
Like 10-8.
Yeah.
10-8. I think it was 10-8.
Something
like that.
Yeah, something like that. For punching the ball, or at least attempting to punch the ball. I think a couple of them kind of
well,
came
here's
close
the thing. He was covering he definitely punched him in the gut once.
Yeah.
But he was trying to uppercut and get the ball. And he's covering the ball up like you should as a running back or any kind of ball carrier.
Yep.
And TJ's just trying to punch it out. So you get punched. It's what it is. I don't know. Here's the thing.
It's obvious that he didn't do it on purpose, because if it was malicious and he was trying to punch the guy maliciously, he would have been ejected immediately.
Yep.
So I get them giving him a slap on the wrist, and that's really all that is at that dollar amount. And it's that low because he has zero offenses previous. This is not like Myles Garrett when he got suspended for 4 games for ripping off a helmet and hitting a guy over the head with it, because twice previously that season, he had actually punched an opponent in the head.
Yep.
I used to watch every single Browns game because my wife's a Browns fan. So
sorry.
I watched every Browns game, every Steelers game every week. And I saw him straight up assaulting people on the other team, and they just weren't calling it. You know, sometimes it was open-handed, but always after the play.
Yep.
And one time it was a closed fist right up to the side of the helmet. And, he wasn't getting fined, and he wasn't getting penalized for it. So that was – I think he got one fine like a week or two before the Steelers game where he ripped off Mason's helmet. But there was a pattern that was escalating to worse and worse behavior, which is why he got such a hefty suspension, but also a completely different level of assault.
Well, and he got out of the suspension after the fact.
Yeah, he did.
Like,
he got it lessened anyway.
Yeah, he got, in my opinion, he got out of it. But that's beside
the point. I thought it should have been at least a season, season-long suspension, but.
Yeah, for sure. But go again, staying right on line with outside linebackers, teams have actually been calling about Melvin Ingram.
Yeah, and they should. Understandably, the trade deadline is week 8.
Yep.
So teams are trying to figure out what they can do to fill holes in their own rosters, and they're looking for people who are not being used as much as maybe they could be, maybe have a little bit more potential given some more playing time.
Well, and I think what's happening right now is, at least with this season, I believe this is the tightest season I've seen in the NFL in a long time. You only have one undefeated team still with the Arizona Cardinals, who just plastered the Houston Texans.
Yeah, annihilated
them. It was 5-0, and then they didn't let them score again. They ended up with 5 points. But just... every division is tight. Even the AFC North being this tight hasn't happened in quite some time.
Yeah.
Typically, there's always one team in it. Typically, it's either the Browns or the Bengals that are, you know,
Dead last,
haven't won a game yet, or maybe 1-1.
And then there's somebody way out in front that's either undefeated or only has one loss. And here we are. We got two teams with 2 losses and two teams with 3 losses.
It's close.
And it's very, very close this
year. So you have all these teams coming and trying to figure out, hey, what can we do before the trade deadline to get us over this hump, to get us to be give us a deep playoff push or make us a Super Bowl contender. Melvin Ingram to some of these teams could do that.
Absolutely. He is a starting quality outside linebacker. Pittsburgh was smart to sign him because he's excellent depth. He played very well in that first regular season game, got to the quarterback. He's been good since then, but hasn't really made a lot of splash. But I do expect that to start happening a little bit more now as Pittsburgh's clearly settling in with their defense, starting to get to the quarterback a little bit more frequently, and some of his teammates are starting to heal up, honestly, from injuries.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for any player at any position to play with an injured groin muscle because you can't really cut laterally. Imagine trying to bend around a corner with a 300, 350-pound man pushing on you, and the muscles that help you bend that corner are hurting. And not just hurting, but hurting badly.
Yeah. Well, and even on top of that, if you look at it in the sense of when TJ Watt comes out, Melvin Ingram being in there doesn't allow for the offensive line to get a play off.
Yeah.
A lot of times with a lot of backups in the NFL, the drop-off from starter to backup is drastic.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that TJ Watt is drastically better than Melvin Ingram, but Melvin Ingram is still a very well-rounded player and can really attack with any kind of moves he wants and isn't going to allow the offensive player to just have a playoff and block minusculely. The player has to still try.
Yeah, you can't run in that direction and target him because he'll shut down a run play easily.
Yep.
So it's nice to have that high quality of a backup because it does really keep the offense honest. It keeps the opposing team honest. They can't target a weakness because it isn't a weakness.
Yep.
That is tremendous to see that. Noticing some more people jumping in. So please comment if you have any questions. Welcome to the chat. Paula Laddie Perry. Love the Perry family. Y'all are great.
Absolutely. Moving on again. Now we're going to go offensive side of the ball for just a short second before we go back to the defensive side. Wide receiver coach Ike Hillard explains why James Washington wasn't as involved in the game plan against Seattle last week. And basically just being said, he didn't practice the position that would have been necessary for him to get more playing time.
Yeah, so you got to remember James Washington was coming off of a groin injury. So he didn't get a chance to practice much that week. He's quite seasoned at playing the outside wide receiver position, but playing the slot's a whole other animal, and that's not something that he's really practiced his first 3 years with Pittsburgh.
Nope.
Now in the fourth year of his rookie deal. Yeah, he doesn't needed to.
Nope.
There's always been Juju or somebody else playing in the slot. Now that Juju's out, it does sound as though they're going to attempt to get some more reps for James Washington out of the slot, which I like that.
That's phenomenal.
He's very physical. If you're going to have somebody that can match the physicality of what Juju represented on the field, James Washington is definitely a guy that can match that physicality, get the extra yards after contact, and move the chains.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have it just be Pratt Freiermuth that is reliable on third down. Got to have options. Got to have multiple
people.
Well,
and that's just it. I think James Washington, if you look back at the previous seasons that Pittsburgh's played, James Washington, as overlooked as he may be in some people's opinion or even in the Steelers' play design or play time or snap count, whatever you want to call it, James Washington has been one of the more consistent receivers Pittsburgh has had.
Yeah.
Consistently catching the ball on third downs, and he's made some impressive catches too in coverage, over the middle, taking hits after he gets the ball. Very, very strong receiver, and I really think that Pittsburgh is hoping to retain him for a longer deal because he's literally a secret weapon that I think is very often overlooked.
Yeah, I think one of the most underappreciated things of James Washington's game is not just his combat catchability is very good. When he's in traffic, he catches it. People don't beat him for it. But his blocking is tremendous, man. Mm-hmm. How many times have we seen plays in previous years? I want to say last year.
Last year when he blocked him in the end zone.
Yeah, there was a slant.
We posted it on our...
And he pancaked two DBs on the play, and Juju just, like, waltzes right in.
Yep.
Like, that kind of blocking capability and effort and just ability is not something you see on a lot of wide receivers. James Washington has it, so... we'll see what the future holds for him. This is his last year on this rookie deal. Being that Pittsburgh hasn't used him a lot, I don't know if he's going to want to stay.
Yeah.
That's the tough part. That's the tough part. But
he's,
I think
he's easily a top two wide receiver in half of the leagues.
Yeah, and half the teams out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Easily you'd be happy with him as your number two. And that's going to be the difficult thing because if Pittsburgh does re-sign him, best case scenario, he's the three. And that's if Juju doesn't come back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be tough for sure. You got Juju. You got Claypool still on his rookie deal. Deontay Johnson, I think, is still on his rookie deal for another year or two. I think it's two. No.
Yeah, this is his third year.
So one more year. Yeah, one more year on his rookie deal. Mm-hmm. And then he'll have to be re-signed or whatever. But, again, not to backtrack too much here, we had a comment. Cindy Tanner said no about if TJ Watt should be fined.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. I get it why they did it, just because it looked worse than
it was. It looked bad, yeah.
Yeah, but it was all just because it looked bad. He was definitely not intending to hurt anyone in the process of doing that.
Nope.
That's for sure. Let's talk all-time Steelers sack list. We had some movement in it recently with both Cam Hayward and TJ Watt. Representing themselves well, adding to their sack totals for their careers. And we just thought it would be a good idea to kind of tell you guys again where things are at as far as like the top 10, I would say, for Steelers all-time sack leaders.
Well, Cam Hayward's been in the top 10 for quite some time.
He has been. And honestly, I would say I'm even going to go top 11 just because of who the number 11 guy is.
That's fair.
And there's quite a gap between 11 and 12, so it makes sense anyway.
It's about nine and a half.
Yeah, but your number 11 all-time Steeler in the sacks is Greg Lloyd with 53 and a half sacks. Greg Lloyd was an absolute menace. And the man that was known for his disposition. He always had a t-shirt that he wore pre-game and post-game, said, "I wasn't hired for my disposition." He was a fifth degree black belt, and he only had 5% body fat. The man was just ridiculous when it came to getting after the quarterback, and was very, very, very tough. Number 10,
buddy. Dwight White. He was only a sack and a half ahead of Greg Lloyd, but again, sitting there at 55 sacks was originally ninth, but very, very recently just got taken over by TJ Watt, who is now, like we said, talking about the two guys that are going to be on the list that are currently still playing. TJ Watt has now entered the top nine all time with 56 and a half, so sack and a half ahead of Dwight White. And TJ Watt has the potential to move up a lot from here this year.
Yeah, and Dwight White, of course, one of the members of the Steel Curtain from the 70s. But yeah, where this part of the actual grouping is really tight. So TJ having his, 56 and a half sacks.
Yep.
Only a half sack ahead of him was Lamar Woodley at 57. He is the eighth all-time sack leader in Pittsburgh Steelers history. And Lamar had quite the career with Pittsburgh.
He did.
Was cut short due to some ankle injuries. He was unable to really fully recover from it. Struggled with some weight issues near the end of his career, too. Played most of his career in that 260-265 range. After the ankle injury, he was closer to about 290, and that was just too big for his position. But really had an excellent ability to get to the quarterback. Was an instrumental part of that victory in Super Bowl 43.
Yeah.
He got to the quarterback multiple times.
And I believe the last one might have been that sack fumble. Yep.
Yep, it was him. He ended the game.
Yep.
Who's our number seven on the list?
Number seven, Keith Wills. This is a guy that was just before my time, ended his career in Pittsburgh in 91. I was born in 92. Didn't get to see this guy play, but again, Keith Wills with 126 games played, 59 sacks, just barely two sacks ahead of Lamar Woodley. I don't have much to say about Keith Wills because I didn't get to see him.
Yeah, and he was that in between, right? So you had the teams of the 70s, and then the 80s and 90s, there was a little bit of a lull. Keith Willis really helped bridge the gap there. He was a guy that could get after the quarterback from the interior and on that defensive end position. So really was a talented guy. Just at the time, didn't have a lot to work with around him, unfortunately.
Yep.
Other than you had like Greg Lloyd. But the offense was not great those years.
No. Number six, the villain himself.
Joey Porter.
Loved to play the bad guy.
Yeah, he did. Even as a coach, he loved to play the bad guy. And Joey was fun. Joey was charismatic. I remember Joey getting kicked out of a game before it even started because he got in the face of the fullback for the Browns pre-game, and you would have swore they were about to fist fight each other before the game even started. He gets ejected. The fullback for the Brown gets ejected. Completely uneven.
Yeah.
A fullback versus an all-pro outside linebacker. It really was not a fair trade-off for Pittsburgh. But that was the very first game that James Harrison got to start for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep.
So that did shed some light into some other talent on the team. But Joey was an excellent outside linebacker for Pittsburgh.
Yep.
What was his total sacks?
60.
60. So this is just 3.5 sacks more than what TJ Watt has right now.
You want to know who else has 60?
Who's that?
Cameron Hayward.
Oh, it's close.
Sitting there at number five all time, Cam Hayward. I don't understand. He's basically tied for fifth with Joey Porter.
Yeah, he is.
Both having 60, but Cam Hayward will break that pretty soon. Possibly even this upcoming week against the Browns. That'd be fun.
That'd be awesome.
It'd be great to see. But Cam Hayward, phenomenal career in Pittsburgh. To put this in perspective, Cam Hayward sitting on 60 sacks in 155 games. TJ Watt is sitting on 56 and a half in just 67 games.
Incredible.
TJ Watt is on pace to shatter the Steelers' all-time sack record.
Especially since he got that extension now.
Yup.
At the rate that he's at right now, basically in two seasons, he should be sitting in that top one or two or top three list of all-time Steelers because he's just absolutely killing it. When you get past Cameron Hayward, next guy on our list is Jason Gildon. Jason would be a little bit less known of a player, but 77 career sacks for him. Really was an excellent outside linebacker and a pass rushing specialist, kind of a longer, lean dude, and just really, really put together a lot of good years. He was that guy that you wouldn't have ever put at the top list of best pass rushers in the NFL, but he would have consistently been in that next tier. When you're a guy that's always getting in that 8 to 10 or even 12 sacks per year kind of category, you're going to end up with a pretty solid career, and that's exactly what happened with Jason Gilden. So really awesome career that he had for Pittsburgh and continued that tradition of excellence in the pass rushing.
Yep. Number three on the list is Mean Joe Green himself.
That's the guy.
Again, not someone I got to watch, but I know all about him. Mean Joe Green ended his career with Pittsburgh with 77.5, just staying in front of Jason Gilden whenever he chose to retire. Mean Joe Green was the real deal.
Absolutely. Just a wrecking ball on the interior of that steel curtain for the Steelers. Really set the tone, and he was the guy that helped turn things around for Pittsburgh. He was the cornerstone. He was the building block. You know, it started with drafting Mean Joe Green, and then they built a team around him. Just incredible wrecking ball and force on the field.
Oh, for sure. And then sitting at number two, Elsie Greenwood. Again, another guy that I didn't really get to see. Had the same time. He literally played hand-in-hand with Mean Joe Green his entire career. They both started in 69, ended in 81. 78 total sacks. The most impressive part that I see with this, again, not seeing these games or getting to watch these two players, Elsie Greenwood actually played 11 games less than Mean Joe Green, had a full half sack more.
Yep. Yeah, fun thing with Elsie Greenwood, he was a defensive end in that 4-3 front, so a little bit more of a pass rushing specialist out of the group. But Elsie Greenwood, early in his career, switched to gold-colored shoes. And the reason he wore gold-colored shoes is because he was sick of Mean Joe Green getting credit for his tackles and sacks. So he knew people would be able to identify him by his shoes, and he was the only one on the defense that wore them. So when you see those old highlights of the teams from the 70s and you see those gold shoes flying around, that was Elsie Greenwood, and he was a menace in getting after the quarterback.
Yep, that's what we like to see. And then, number one.
Just like Joshua Perry said in the comments.
Yes, sir.
James Harrison with 80 career sacks.
James, 80 and a half. Give the man credit the half.
Take that half.
The half sack.
He can have that half. That half isn't going to matter in like 2 years when TJ passes.
Well, so. You're not wrong. James Harrison, just a phenomenal, phenomenal career with Pittsburgh. You almost don't appreciate it enough because he came from so many different teams, practice squad. He was such an overlooked individual because of his size.
Cut like five times.
Yeah, and then he comes to Pittsburgh, makes a big splash by, you know, throwing a Browns fan to the ground before he ever had a name for himself.
Very true.
And then even now, when you think of James Harrison, you don't think, well, maybe you do. I personally don't think of the all-time Steelers sack leader. I think of that pick six in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's all I can think of.
Yeah.
So, again, maybe overlooked in the sense of the accomplishment that he has leading such a great team in their career, in the entire team's history of sack leaders. When you look at the names on this list, it's pretty impressive. But, again, I think James Harrison sometimes gets forgotten because of all the other things that he was doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the weightlifting he was posting about. And
yep, and he was a villain in his day, too.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it was important. On any successful team, you succeed because people can't push you around, and you have to have one or two bouncers on the team, one or two tough guys that nobody on any opposing team wants to mess with. In the 70s, you had Jack Lambert. You know, Jack Lambert wasn't scared to punch anybody in the mouth, and he made that very clear, right?
Yep.
James Harrison was that guy for the Steelers in Super Bowl 40 and 43. You wouldn't be able to push them around because he wasn't going to let it happen. You couldn't go try to intimidate somebody because he'd just go knock one of your teammates out. Like, that's the kind of guy that teams need to have. And now it's really frowned upon having that kind of enforcer type player on your team. But honestly, I think you need to have at least one guy that people kind of fear.
Yeah, I feel like the last player that I wouldn't even qualify as an enforcer or characterize them as that, but the player that people didn't fear, but the people just didn't want to deal with was Ndamukong Suh because of the dirtiness of the play.
Yeah.
Which he's thankfully gotten away from in recent years. At least
yeah, I haven't seen him do anything in a while.
Mm-mm.
He's also not really a significant player anymore.
That's true. That's very true.
But I feel like it's an important thing to have. And I think the closest Pittsburgh has right now is Cam Hayward. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anybody fears him doing anything malicious. It's more just they know how incredibly strong he is, how physical he is. And they know not to mess with him, you know.
Yep.
If he comes into a pile and moves some people, you get out the way.
Very true. Very true. So again, that's basically, for the most part, all we had on Steelers news and what we wanted to cover as far as the Steelers is concerned. Now we want to go ahead and take a look. Every week we do this. Obviously last week we couldn't, but we want to look ahead to the Browns. So Pittsburgh will be playing the Browns this upcoming week. Unfortunately, there's a chance Baker Mayfield will be back. I hope he's not.
Yeah, honestly, I think it's kind of reckless if the Browns play him.
I agree.
I would liken this to a few years ago, back before the Browns actually started drafting well again. They had Joel Bitonio on the offensive line early in his career.
Yep.
At this stage in his career, he was the only good offensive lineman that they had. And it was pretty obvious early in his career that he was a very good one. But on one play, I'm watching the game. He gets injured. He gets rolled up on or something. He's limping around and he doesn't come off the field. I started yelling at the TV and I said, get him out of there. What are you doing? He's your best player. At the time, this was before Nick Chubb, before Baker Mayfield, before Odell Beckham Jr.,
yep.
Before any of these other guys were on the team. I was like, you got to get him out of there. You can't sustain an injury to a player that good when you don't have very many good players. They didn't sub him out. They should have just called a timeout and forced him to come out of the game. They didn't do it. Let him play injured. Every player wants to play injured. They want to show how tough they are.
Yep.
And what do you think happened the next play? He got rolled up on again because he couldn't defend himself. He couldn't get out of the way of a pile. And then he was out for the year.
Yep.
Fully preventable, but you do have to protect players from themselves sometimes. This whole rant is just me going back to Baker Mayfield and saying, the man has a broken humerus. He should not be playing.
Nope. He shouldn't even be
practicing. He needs at least a month for that bone to heal up and solidify again. And by playing him while he has a broken bone in his arm, and it's up there in the shoulder where it keeps on getting dislocated, obviously the apparatus that they had to keep it from dislocating did not work.
Nope.
He's got a completely torn labrum.
Yep.
It's going to need surgery in the offseason to fix it because yep. It's not connected anymore.
Not a good idea. Doing? Not a good
what
idea
are you
to
doing?
Play Baker.
Like, if you're going to keep Baker Mayfield long term, you should not play him right now.
Yep.
At least let the bone heal. I get it if you want to risk it and let him play with a torn labrum. Okay, I guess I get it. It's not his throwing arm, at least. But to put him out there with a broken bone is just reckless, in my opinion. And honestly, the backup quarterback, Case Keenum, is a pretty good quarterback.
Yeah, just won a game with them on Thursday night for this past week.
Yeah, it's so. Not like he lit him up or anything, but you know what? They won the game.
Yep, he's capable of getting the job done. And I'd say that if they were smart, they'd take a chance on this game to just stick with Case Keenum for this one game.
Yeah.
And see where it goes. And here's the thing. It's not like you can't. It's not like if they get worried or if we start beating them, they can't sub Baker in. Again, not a smart move.
Yeah, if you dress him.
Not a smart move.
If they dress him.
That's true. Well, if they're potentially going to play him, I'm sure they'd dress
then
him
in
general.
Then they'd dress him, yeah.
But yeah, so again, that Baker Mayfield being one of the bigger injuries here. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt were both out for this last game, and their fourth string running back, based on their depth chart online, D'Ernest Johnson.
Had a heck of a game, man.
Took off. 146 yards, I think two touchdowns, or was it one?
A lot. I don't know.
A lot. Fair enough. It doesn't matter. It's
boy,
Browns. But
that
still.
Boy had a game. He had a game, man. He played real well. Chubb could possibly be back for the Steelers game.
Yep.
But don't discount their backup running backs. They played very well. And whether it's Nick Chubb out there or one of the backups, obviously Nick Chubb is a tremendous running back. His ability to break tackles and get yards after the catch is just very elite when it comes to the running backs in the NFL.
Yeah. And I think how well their backup running backs did this past week just shows the power and the strength that is their offensive line. Their offensive line is very, very well equipped to handle both pass rush and run-stopping defenses, which Pittsburgh has ability to be both at times. So I'm going to be very curious to see what happens this week. Again, to go over the depth chart offensive line-wise, they have Jedrick Wills Jr., Joel Batonio, excuse me, J.C. Treader, Wyatt Teller, and Jack Conklin as their starters. All very, very, very capable offensive linemen that I feel like I say this a lot. This is probably the best offensive line we will have played up to this point, by far.
They will be the best offensive line that the Steelers face all year. The only injury as of right now, Jack Conklin's missed the last couple games. James Hudson's filled in pretty admirably. Well, it's easy for me to say, huh?
You got it.
He's done pretty well out there at right tackle in his stead. The other four are all fully healthy at this stage in playing. The real weaknesses here, Batonio and Treader are susceptible to length and power moves on the inside. These offensive linemen for the Browns are specialists in running the ball. You get them out there run blocking and they're tremendous. Pass blocking is where they are susceptible. So if you can get some power up against those two guys, left guard and center, you could have some real success there. And then on the right side, I would fully attack
Hudson,
that backup tackle. Yep. Yeah, whether it be Hudson or whether somebody else ends up playing,
I would
attack him.
I would very much hate to see Pittsburgh do what they've been doing this year, where they play like a weak side defense and have both the off ball linebacker, or excuse me, the outside linebackers line up on the same side. I hate that.
Yeah, if they do that in this game, Cleveland will exploit it. You cannot go unbalanced against a team that is this successful running the ball. That's for sure.
Yep.
Wide receiver room's pretty deep here as well.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
The starters, Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, but Odell is injured again.
Yep.
But the backups are some pretty solid backups. Rashard Higgins, a good deep threat. Donovan Peoples-Jones, a big and capable wide receiver. And then Anthony Schwartz, who's their number five wide receiver.
He's quick.
Lightning fast, man. He's a 4.2 40 kind of guy.
Very quick.
So you got to know when he's on the field where he's at. And he's the return guy, too.
Yep.
So on kicks and punts, you got to make sure you stay in your lanes. Don't give him an alley, or the potential of him taking it to the house is there every single time.
Absolutely. Tight end room is also fairly decent with depth.
You're
sitting on Austin Hooper, David Njoku, who was the previous starter for the Browns the past few seasons.
Pick.
Yep. And then Harrison Bryant, who they picked up in
a couple years ago in the draft.
I believe it was last year's draft was Harrison Bryant. So very well equipped offense. Going to be one of the bigger tests that our defense has played all year, for sure.
Yeah, and these tight ends are going to be receiving specialists. So if you see some one-on-one matchups with them versus T.J. Watt or Alex Highsmith or Melvin Ingram, look for our outside linebackers to disengage them very easily. But I would expect them to do a lot of fake blocking and then going out for passes.
Yep.
So Devin Bush and Joe Schobert are really going to have to be on their game this week.
Yep. Moving on to the defensive side, we'll start with the line. Everyone already knows the two guys, Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney on the outside there. Myles Garrett with his colorful history against Pittsburgh, to say the least. I think arguably the best defensive player that Cleveland Browns have had in, well,
I'd say since Josh Cribbs. Josh Cribbs was really talented.
Well, I'm saying defensive specifically.
Defensively, okay.
He's probably the best that I've ever seen, having been born in 92, started watching football in about 98. Yeah. I don't think they've had a better player.
No,
since.
I'd agree. Like my entire lifetime, I don't think the Browns have had a better player than him.
Yeah.
Not on defense. On offense, sure, but on defense, nope.
Yep. And then Jadeveon Clowney, obviously, kind of, I view Jadeveon Clowney very, very similar to the whole Melvin Ingram. Very capable to come in and apply some pressure, maybe a little bit even better.
Clowney a little bit more of a speed guy, though.
Yeah.
Ingram a little more of a power guy.
Yeah. And Jadeveon Clowney is well known for his big hits. Yep. Everyone remembers the big hit in college football where he knocked the player's helmet off.
Yep, and then Takaris McKinley, the backup defensive end, outside linebacker, whatever you want to call him, he's also a former first-round pick. So they got some serious pedigree going on. In the entire defensive front, honestly, Malik Jackson and Malik McDowell also were very high pedigree draft picks when it was their time. So there's a lot of depth going on there. This defensive front is much more successful against the pass than they are against the run.
Yeah.
They are susceptible to the run. They will get after your quarterback. So hopefully Pittsburgh keeps Zach Gentry in there a little bit extra to help out the offensive tackles and double team Myles Garrett from time to time, because you don't want him one-on-one with Dan Moore Jr., who's been struggling.
Absolutely. So obviously you heard the four down linemen. They run a 4-3, the three middle linebacker, or the three linebackers. The first one being just recently moved to IR.
That's right, Jeremiah Onwusu-Koromoa, the smaller rookie middle linebacker. He's had a really good year.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the thing that we were concerned about with a guy that size is durability. Unfortunately, he got truck-sticked, absolutely truck-sticked 2 weeks ago, and went to the injured reserve, injured on the play. Just got run over. I mean, when you're a 215-pound middle linebacker, there's a lot of running backs that are bigger and heavier and stronger than you.
Most of them.
a lot of them in the NFL. So he will not be out there. You will see Mack Wilson in his stead. Anthony Walker's putting together some pretty decent play thus far in the season. And then, of course, Sione Takitaki.
Takitaki.
It's a fun name, man.
It is a fun name. I feel like they just look for guys with fun names.
They
had Ogunjobi well before. Yeah. They even have the guy on the team now. I don't even know.
Yeah.
We're not even going to
try.
That's
a tough one. There's a family of them. Obendejo or something. Obendigbo. I don't know, man.
I don't know.
He's not the first one in the league, and he won't be the last. There's a few of them in the league.
But again, I think the thing that, believe it or not, I think the thing that most scares me in this game is not that front seven or even Myles Garrett. This secondary is no joke. You have Denzel Ward as the left corner, right corner being Greg Newsom. Some of these guys may still be injured or fighting injuries.
Yeah.
There's a chance that some of these guys don't play. Even the backups, Greedy Williams was recently dealing with an injury. If this team comes out and plays and has a healthy secondary, I'm scared, because then you also look at the safeties, Ronnie Harrison Jr. and John Johnson III, and no joke. John Johnson III has been taken advantage of, I would say, in his NFL career, but he's not a pushover. If you underestimate him, you will throw a pick, he will force a fumble. But again, you can't do the whole underestimating thing, which we talked about last time when we talked about playing Geno Smith against the Seahawks. I don't want to see that happen with this secondary.
Yeah, lots of pedigree. When you look across the board on this, Denzel Ward was a former first-round pick. Greedy Williams was either first or second. Same with Greg Newsom. They just drafted him. Ronnie Harrison, a higher draft pick. Grant Delpit, I believe, was a first or second round pick, too. This secondary is loaded with first and second round picks. So the secondary and the defensive line is just loaded with high pedigree guys who were drafted very highly, either by the Browns or by the team that they were drafted by.
Yep.
When they were rookies. Almost like the Steelers practice squad.
Yeah, very similar.
a bunch of first and second round guys in
yep.
there.
So again, we'll look at the special teams briefly. Jamie Gillen, punter, Chase McLaughlin for the kicker, and then the holder is the same punter, Jamie Gillen. And then kick return, punt return, believe it or not, Anthony Swartz is not starting on either of those. It's Demetric Felton, that third string running back of them. That they have that I haven't seen much of. I'm very curious to see what he does.
Yeah.
Against our special teams on kick and punt coverage. And then Charlie Hewlett, long snapper, because they matter too.
They do matter. You know what else matters? The guns on your punter. Have you seen this punter for the Browns?
I have not.
This dude is like, I want to say he's Irish or something. He looks like a linebacker. Dude is well built. This is the kind of guy that if he gets a hit on you, it's going to hurt, but a talented player nonetheless. So not a lot of glaring holes. And this is what people have been talking about with this Browns team for the last 2-3 years now. When you look at their roster, there's a lot of talent there. It's no different now, just a few more injuries than what they've dealt with in previous years.
Yep.
So the injuries will play a large part of the factor of this game and keys to success for this week. I would say one of them for me is going to be creating turnovers. Pittsburgh has not created a lot of turnovers in previous weeks.
Other than TJ Watt.
Really need to increase that.
It's basically TJ Watt.
Yeah, I mean, they've got 2 interceptions on the year in 6 games. It's not enough.
Nope.
So if you're going to succeed in the NFL, winning the turnover battle is important, and that starts with creating turnovers. Number two, stop the run. This is one of the best running teams in the entire NFL. And if you cannot at least slow down this running game of the Browns, they're just going to go up and down the field on you.
Yep.
They will just give it to whoever's back there, and they'll run right down the field. So they have to commit to stopping the run, and it's got to be something that they pull off this week. Second off, just finishing drives.
Yeah.
Can't be getting 3 or 4 field goals in this game. Got to get that 3 or 4 touchdowns instead.
Absolutely.
And just getting that 7 makes such a big difference at the end of the game.
You want my 3?
Yeah.
My 3 go hand in hand, not with yours, but with each other.
Okay.
This is going to be a weird week for me. My 3 keys to success against the Browns. Control the pace.
Okay.
Control, and when I say that's number one. Number one is control the pace of the game. Number two is keep the pace fast. Do not allow the offense, I don't care who's quarterback, whether it's Case Keenum or Baker Mayfield, do not allow them to get comfortable. Make sure your defense is moving just as fast as the offense. Put up points. Allow that pace to be fast. The reason I say that is a lot of times when people say control the pace of the game, it's all about time management and running the ball. And mm-hmm. I want us to be able to run the ball, but I want to control the pace, and I want the pace to be fast specifically. And the last one is do not get comfortable with a lead to where you slow the pace down. I hate when Pittsburgh goes off to a big lead in games, which hasn't happened in a while, but in the time that Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger have been together, they've gone up, 2-3 scores. And then they slow down. Don't. It's the NFL. Don't. Too many teams come back and win games because they slowed down their pace. They stopped playing their game. They stopped controlling the ball the way that they were controlling it. Control the pace. Keep the pace fast. And don't stop. Those are my 3.
No lead is safe.
No lead is safe.
I like it, man. Not until there's zeros at the fourth quarter is your lead safe.
Yep. We almost saw what happened last week.
Yeah.
Well, I should say 2 weeks ago. Against the Seahawks. So, can't rely on the refs to make the right calls at the end of the game.
Yeah.
As Mike Tomlin said.
Man, he was fired up. I thought for sure he was going to get fined, but I never heard anything.
He might have. I bet you they just kept it off the books because they didn't want to draw any more attention to it.
Yep. It was a bad enough situation for him.
Yep. So, again, thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. Thank you if you joined in on our Facebook Live. We appreciate you guys and the support. More than you know, we look forward to continuing this season and hopefully getting to the playoffs with the Steelers.
Dang right, man.
Heck yeah. So again, be sure to like and follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Steelers by the Lake. And until next time, this is your host, James and Cody, signing off.
Peace.